You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at that very website, or you can mail us a letter and or a contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 2nd, 2026. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we're still in countdown mode.
The count goes on.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Because this is the 996th episode of the Professional Left Podcast with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
And today we promise you sex, violence, and political controversy.
Love that word.
Controversy.
Love that word.
No, we hate that word, but.
But first, in reverse order from our usual lineup, we're going to do a quick roundup of the news and events shaping your lives today. A news roundup, if you will. Off to you. The race is now to you, Blue Gal.
First, this update on the ever-evolving ceasefire that apparently means everyone just keeps shooting at everyone else. From the AL Monitor, quote, Israel orders evacuation of southern Beirut as Iran reportedly suspends talks, unquote.
Or
nobody knows anything anymore here.
Promising developments is what I'm sure how the White House would frame it. And from the Washington Post, quote, Iran says it is breaking off talks to end war after U.S. and Israeli strikes. Negotiations were suspended because of Israel's escalating military attacks in Lebanon and U.S. strikes, an Iranian official told the Post, unquote. Because, to misquote Donald Rumsfeld, you go to war with the Israel you have, not the Israel you might want to wish to have at a later date.
There's a lot of Israelis who would like to have a better Israel than they have right now, I gotta say.
Millions of them. And, you know, and hopefully they will get their wish.
And triumph at some point against the corruption and garbage that's going on right now.
Yep.
The website News of the United States, a.k.a. Not Us, has a long, interesting article entitled, quote, The Rise and Fall of the House Freedom Caucus Leaders. As Trump's power has grown, the influence of the conservative group has waned significantly, unquote. It turns out the wingnut ratchet only turns one way, and the Freedom Caucus didn't bend the knee deep enough to suit the dear leader. So he's mowing them down one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes for the article, quote, As he came down the center aisle of the House for his February State of the Union address, President Donald Trump shook the hands of many Republicans looking for their couple seconds of fame on national TV. But he breezed past Representative Chip Roy, never looking him in the eye, and moving on to pose for a selfie with another Republican. That moment summed up Trump's rocky relationship with the Texas firebrand and, more broadly, the House Freedom Caucus. The group of roughly three dozen far-right lawmakers rose to prominence by derailing legislation and helping to force out GOP speakers. Their relationship with Trump has been complicated over the years.
Yeah.
But their power has waned significantly as Trump's power has grown. Chip Roy, the group's ideological soul on many policy matters, lost by a double-digit margin Tuesday in his bid for the GOP nomination to become Texas State Attorney General. Huh? He was defeated by a state senator who claimed Roy wasn't a real MAGA supporter. Unquote.
Not real MAGA. Shame on you, Chip Roy. Shame. This is from the Substack of Heather Delaney Reese. May 31st, quote, Donald Trump knows he's in serious trouble. At 8:15 this morning, the president of the United States began panicking in front of the entire world. For more than 7 hours, he posted nearly 50 times. And when he finally slowed down, it would stand as one of the most revealing fits of rage of his presidency to date. And that is saying something, because what he shared was beyond any reasonable person's comprehension. He complained that because China has a ballroom, he should have one too. He posted an image of a Trump Peace Prize bearing his own face. He repeatedly compared himself to George Washington. He shared an image of himself kissing a flag. He shared a heroic fantasy image of himself depicted as the God of War that said, in all caps, "You're getting discombobulated." And most concerning of all, he repeatedly called for a federal judge to be investigated, impeached, and removed from the bench, placing both the judge and his wife in danger by putting a target on their backs before an already radicalized base of loyalists, unquote.
It's time to stop calling them loyalists and start calling them terrorists.
Yeah, which is what they are.
Yep. From NPR, May 28th, 2026, quote, "This is how close American households are to the financial edge. Affordability has been a politically potent word, but an ill-defined measure of financial pain, often used as a reference to inflated prices. But new research from the Brookings Institution released Wednesday describes affordability by comparing the rising costs of essentials against family incomes. By that measure, the report found in 2024, 45.5% of U.S. households did not earn enough to cover their necessities. The report concluded that a mere $1,000 hike in the annual cost of living would leave another 3 million households unable to make ends meet. That precarity is partly due to the gap between inflation and wages. In 2024, national wages saw just a small 1.3% bump, well below the rate of inflation of 2.9% that year, according to the Census Bureau," unquote.
And from MS Now, in the opinion section, May 29th, 2026, quote, "Project 2029 sure doesn't look like an answer to Project 2025. A Democratic group is displaying a puzzling lack of ambition for the party's policy vision." Huh. "The new Democratic policy group, Project 2029, sees itself as an answer to Project 2025, the radical MAGA policy blueprint President Donald Trump has embraced during his second term to transform the government. But Project 2029's shockingly timid first policy rollout this week suggests the group isn't up to fulfilling its own mandate." And here's the money shot. "The people behind Project 2029 exclusively released their initial set of proposals to The Bulwark, in and of itself signaling moderation." I knew my copy just wasn't lost in the mail, Blue Gal.
No, I was wondering. You kept looking at the mailbox going, "Where's mine?"
Sitting outside like I was in sixth grade waiting for the thing I ordered from Grit Magazine to show up.
I was going
to
say that decoder ring is never going to come, Drift Glass.
How can I see girls' underwear without the X-ray glasses, Blue Gal? The article continues, "The Bulwark, home of many never-Trump Republicans," yeah, "is a conservative sector of the Democratic coalition." No. The Democratic Party ceased
what?
To exist.
Wait a As minute. We know, read that again. Say that again.
"The Bulwark, home of many Trump never-Trump Republicans, is a conservative sector of the Democratic coalition."
Okay. What a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. It's the pro-democracy coalition because the Democratic Party doesn't exist anymore, Blue Gal.
Uh-huh.
I've been told by people working on Project 2029. "The group's apparent view of the Bulwark as friendly turf suggests its outlook on social change is going to be restrained," unquote.
All of these things are billionaire funded by somebody.
Yeah, of course they are.
Who doesn't want the tax cuts to go away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're going to be fiscally responsible by letting you keep all your money. And that's what this is. You can just see right through it. Okay. From Jeff Bezos, Washington Post, May 31st, quote, "The Pentagon is moving to recruit hundreds of troops to appear as spectators at President Donald Trump's UFC cage fighting event at the White House and requiring those who attend to pay for their travel and meet height and weight requirements." In other words, it's Pete Hegg says no fatties.
Yeah, it's they're props. They're just props.
Yeah, they're props. Why don't they just go to Fox News to get a bunch of attractive, fit people to fill the audience?
Because they wouldn't be in uniform, Blue Gal.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. Anyway, according to people familiar with the matter and internal memos reviewed by the Washington Post, so they're asking volunteers to come forward in uniform to show up at this UFC fight on the White House lawn and pay for their own travel to get there?
Yeah. So they can, you know, be props in Donald Trump's rapidly collapsing, you know, White House fire festival.
Yeah, yeah.
On Fox News Sunday, May 31st, Shannon Bream asked Trump's economic advisor, Kevin Hassett, the following, quote, The Bureau of Labor Statistics says inflation is now outpacing wage growth. How do you answer that concern? It's a very straightforward question, and she asked it very well. Hassett replied, that's a technical matter. Personal income includes things like food stamps that we have reduced as part of our effort to make government leaner and meaner. Fuck you, poor people. I'm rich. And you should just, maybe if you apply and ask Real Nice to come to the UFC cage match, you can have some popcorn or candy if you pay for your own travel.
He also, in that same interview, was asked about credit card default rates, that people are not paying their credit cards off in time.
Yep.
And his response was, we talk to credit card company presidents all the time. They're doing fine. It was
Don't worry about them. I know you're deeply concerned about the CEOs of credit card companies, but don't worry.
I'm not making that up, by the way.
Uncovered. No, no. And here's a fun fact. At no point has Hassett ever appeared in public without wearing the most punchable smirk in America on his big, dumb face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He really is. Either he's just going to play this role of pretending that the only people he represents are billionaires, or he really believes that. Speaking of extremely punchable trolls posing as economists, this from Media Matters. Quote, live with it. Fox Business host Larry Kudlow has repeatedly dismissed high prices weighing on Americans. Kudlow has downplayed the economic effects of the Iran war since its outset. On March 9th, he predicted that if the conflict didn't last more than 4 or 5, 6 weeks, it can't have much of an economic impact, saying, I mean, $3.50 gasoline for a couple weeks to me doesn't mean anything. He shrugged off rising prices again a few days later, saying, gasoline is up about 50 cents a gallon. Big deal.
This is where I would have dropped in the very last line from Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. So what?
Big deal. Yeah. Yep.
As the war dragged into its third month, Kudlow continued to downplay rising gas prices and growing inflation. On his May 13th show, Kudlow said, I don't care about a couple of months of $4 gasoline. Honestly, I don't care if the inflation rate goes to 5%. This is the defense of freedom and civilization and Western values, Judeo-Christian values.
About which Larry Kudlow knows nothing.
Kudlow continued to insist, it's a small price to pay. I don't give a damn. He similarly dismissed a lot of moaning and groaning and hand-wringing and so forth about inflation, adding, I don't care, unquote.
Could the title of this podcast be I Don't Care? I don't know. It seems unlikely, but... And oh, this is from Yahoo News, or Yahoo Finance, by the way, in the same category as everything you've heard already. Quote, Jim Jordan said $5 a gallon gas would kill the economy under Biden in 2022. Now with prices at $4.35, he says, hey, that's life, unquote.
And speaking of Jim Jordan, this is from NBC News a few weeks ago that somehow didn't get the attention it deserved. Quote, former Ohio State official testified he doesn't believe Representative Jim Jordan's denials about Strauss's abuse. The testimony was included in thousands of pages of unsealed sworn depositions in the ongoing lawsuit alleging OSU failed to protect students from an abusive campus doctor, unquote.
And this is from ProPublica, May 28th, quote, when the Pentagon announced a $620 million loan last year to a startup linked to Donald Trump Jr., defense officials and the company tried to tamp down suspicion of cronyism. We found out the request came directly from the White House, unquote.
From alternate May 30th, quote, Trump's presidential library is really a $1 billion cover-up machine. The New York Times reports Trump has no intention of making his presidential library a reservoir for review of his administration, as other presidents have done. In his determination to own and control every document in his future library, the president is working to shield his administration's inner workings from public view. Mr. Trump had said that the $1 billion project, the priciest presidential library yet, could include a hotel.
Yeah.
Also, retail sales outlets, you know, like you can buy the hats.
which is a fancy way of saying hookers, high-priced hookers.
Hookers and money, please. But more disturbing to historians and government watchdogs is his determination to own and control every document a presidential library would contain, said the Times. Not since the Watergate era, when President Richard M. Nixon took his fight to control the incriminating White House tapes to the Supreme Court, has a president worked so hard to shield documentary evidence of his administration's inner workings from public view, unquote. And we don't have to remind our viewers and listeners that when the Supreme Court voted 9-0 against him, Nixon obeyed the Supreme Court.
Yes, he did.
Instead of the other way around, which is how it is with Trump.
A unanimous decision.
5-4, Trump court obeys Donald Trump at every turn.
Yep. That took 50 years to accomplish, but they did.
They worked on it for 50 years. Yep.
And speaking of obliterating the past on purpose, because you don't want anyone to find out about it, but this is from NPR, May 26, quote, Trump DOJ mass deletes info on January 6 riot cases, including violent assaults on cops. The Trump administration has mass deleted information about prosecutions tied to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, including cases of defendants who assaulted police officers. The removals mark the latest phase of President Trump's effort to rewrite history of the violent riot. Justice Department news releases that detailed guilty pleas, jury verdicts, and prison sentences abruptly disappeared from government websites last week. On social media, the Justice Department defended the move, saying, "We are proud to reverse the DOJ's weaponization under the Biden administration. We will do everything in our power to make whole those who were persecuted for political purposes. This includes stripping the DOJ website of partisan propaganda," unquote. This is straight up Ministry of Truth, Big Brother shit. Out in the open, right out in the open. You know why? Because every fucking Republican voter out there is completely cool with this part of it. They might find gas prices inconvenient and be mad about that, or tariffs or the war. But Donald Trump shredding the past to pretend shit that they did and were complicit in and cheered on never happened is 100% cool with these Republican scumbag voters who are to blame for every goddamn thing that's happening to us right now.
Even if they were horrified the day after. Even if everyone at Fox was horrified the day after.
Yeah. That's why we call them
reprogrammable. Doesn't matter. We have to erase it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do. Another day, another Republican stealing credit for a bill he voted against. This is from our friend Capper at Crooks and Liars, May 31st. It was recently announced that Wisconsin is getting $94.3 million from the EPA to fight lead in drinking water. Great news indeed. Even Representative Brian Steele thought so and took to Twitter to celebrate the news and pat himself on the back for having worked to bring safe drinking water to the state. There's just one teensy problem, and you all know what that is. The money was allocated in 2021 through President Joe Biden's Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which naturally Steele had voted against, unquote.
And one last news roundup item from ABC News, May 30th, quote, the Department of Justice has launched a criminal investigation into E. Jean Carroll, the former Elle magazine columnist who accused President Donald Trump of sexual assault, according to multiple sources familiar with the matter. The investigation is allegedly centered around whether Carroll committed perjury during her civil lawsuits against President Trump, after which she was awarded a $5 million judgment, the sources said. And, unquote, by the way, she was awarded even more than the original settlement because Trump just wouldn't shut the fuck up about it and kept attacking
her about it
after he was found guilty. So this is him just absolutely out in the open. We're taking the DOJ and we're using every resource of this White House to attack anyone who says anything bad about me or has ever sued me or ever tried to make me accountable for my actions.
Right, right. Now, to repeat a couple of pieces of information you hear at the top of every episode of the Professional Left podcast, recorded since Barack Obama was president, by the way, we are the Cornfield Resistance, and we operate out of a P.O. box and a little tiny house in Springfield, Illinois.
Yes. Yes, Springfield, Illinois. So what does this mean? It means that when we got our Democratic primary mail-in ballots in March, we voted for Juliana Stratton for Senate. We did not and will not vote for Graham Plattner for Senate. And you know why? because we do not live in Maine. Even though there is, in fact, a town called Springfield in Penobscot County, Maine, we do not live there. We live in Springfield, Illinois, and Juliana Stratton will be Illinois' next senator because the guy, actually, that we met and chatted amiably with at the bookstore on Sunday, Dick Durbin, is retiring. In fact, he's already given his farewell speech, Blue Gal. And there he was, by himself, at the bookstore, looking for a summer read. And it occurred to Blue Gal too late that we should have pointed out that in the room where it happened by John Bolton, was sitting right there on the nonfiction new releases table, would have been a great summer read,
new
Senator.
New releases table. That's what Springfield's Barnes & Noble thinks should be displayed.
Yeah. Yeah.
John Bolton's book from, you know, 6 years ago? 5 years ago?
Whenever it was. Could have been two months. But the runaway bestseller. John Bolton's runaway bestseller.
Hey, Dick Durbin, you want a summer read? How about reading this John Bolton book?
I bet you could get it autographed. I bet you could.
I bet you could. Mm-hmm. It would be good summer reading for the former senator. He was very pleasant to us.
He was very nice.
I don't think he liked being recognized.
No. But he was
no
by himself.
No one else in the bookstore recognized him either. He didn't have any security with him.
No, he was by himself, just another old guy looking for a book.
Looking for summer hardcover books. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, getting back to Springfield, Maine, as well as everywhere else in Maine, people will be going to the polls on June 9th in Maine to decide who they want to represent them in the general election for U.S. Senate in November. Susan Collins, the 130-year-old Republican damp handshake, is running unopposed in the Republican primary. On the Democratic side, there are somewhere between 2 and 4 candidates, depending on the day of the week and the position of the planets. Among the candidates are Graham Platner and David Costello, who are on the primary ballot as active Democratic candidates.
Then there's Janet Mills, who may or may not be running. This is from CNN, quote, Janet Mills reminds voters that she's still on the ballot against Platner as some supporters want her to campaign again. Some prominent supporters of Maine Governor Janet Mills' now suspended campaign run for the U.S. Senate suggested Monday that she should revive her campaign in a last-ditch effort to stop Graham Platner as his bid becomes engulfed by another, what's the word, Blue Gal? What's that word there?
Controversy.
Yes, another controversy. I definitely want her to run to unsuspend her campaign, said Lynn Bromley, a former state senator who had appeared in an anti-Platner ad for Mills. There are a lot of us, she added, who will vote for Mills in the June 9th primary, despite Platner emerging as the presumptive nominee. While Mills suspended her campaign over a month ago, her name remains on the primary ballot in a state with ranked choice voting. Mills raised eyebrows when she told a Maine newspaper columnist that she is, quote, still on the ballot, on Sunday, a day after news outlets reported that Platner's wife had flagged to a campaign staff at the start of the race that he had sent sexual text messages to other women, unquote.
And finally, there could be a woman named Andrea LaFlamme, or maybe not, and about whom we know this much. This is from WMTW, Maine, March 3rd, 2026. Quote, Bangor activist who wrote in chalk outside Senator Collins' home, now running for the Senate. Andrea LaFlamme is officially launching her campaign for Senate. And Senator Collins had a cow over that.
She called the cops over that.
She called the cops on who wrote in chalk on her sidewalk.
They were disappointed in her letting Roe v. Wade be gutted because of her approval of Supreme Court nominee.
Right, exactly.
And that was...
She promised would never happen.
She promised would never happen. And it was like the most genteel protest you can imagine, and she flipped out. She lost her shit.
Yeah.
And in this race in Maine, every pundit in Christendom has pushed all their chips in, because even though a place like Texas is an overflowing cesspit of rampant corruption and racism and misogyny, frankly, it's all a bit boring by now. It gives the pundits no new bones to chew on, you know?
Here's another example from today. Is it technically news that Donald Trump has appointed Bill Pulte, his stooge at a federal housing agency, to be the director of national intelligence now that Tulsi Gabbard has quit? Sure, that Pulte has zero national security experience, that Pulte's claim to fame has been targeting Trump's political enemies with bullshit lawsuits, that Trump made him acting director of national intelligence so he could dodge Senate confirmation hearings.
Yeah, he's only acting because we don't want him answering any questions
right.
posed by senators. And yes, all of that is news. But is any of it surprising? Of course not. Because Trump is a monster who doesn't give a shit about this country or its people. And Republican elected officials and his enablers in the media are cowards and grifters and parasites and fanatics who have made themselves completely subservient to Donald Trump. And Republican voters who are ultimately responsible for all of this are the worst people in the world. All of this, all of it is already known. It's already baked into how life is now in these United States. So it's news, but it's not really new, if you know what I mean.
Yep. But tucked up in the furthest northeastern point in the contiguous United States, in the ninth least populated and the third whitest state in America, the pundits have found a nice wide feeding trough where they can gorge themselves, even though they had to build and load much of that trough themselves. It's something novel, an event around which soapboxes can be arranged and loud professional pontificators can sound off. It gives the shit weasels at the National Review something to talk about other than another fumbling excuse for why Trump isn't really that bad. Certainly no worse than the imaginary liberals who live under their beds. Quote, Maine shows anti-Semitism is a shortcut to success in the modern Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
Unquote. That is the formula. One offensive tattoo stupidly applied by one drunk young soldier on shore leave and later apologized for and covered up equals the entire Democratic, modern Democratic Party being anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them. Because see, they're bad too. Trump may be a racist, but all Democrats are also anti-Semitic.
And that
all
is,
of them.
That truly is the formula. Anytime any Democrat anywhere does anything that is controversial or shit just made up, every Democrat is answerable for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas every time Donald Trump, you know, shreds another plank of the Constitution, wipes his ass with the Bill of Rights, loots the country, it's just one of those days, just Tuesday. You know, nobody's really responsible for it. It's just how things are right now. But the shit weasels are not confined to the National Review. Over at the New York Times. The New York fucking Times. I apologize for mispronouncing that, blue gal. David French's pearl-clutching column, The Plattner Trap, proves that smarmy conservative evangelical moralizers never get over it, even after they've been driven out of their Republican safe space by Donald Trump. Here is French on May 10th, served up, of course, with the usual fat slice of both siderism on the side. Quote, I don't want politicians to be authentic. I want them to be decent. I want them to be honest. I want them to be competent. And if they fail those tests, they don't redeem themselves by opposing President Trump. Got it? Opposition to Trump is not enough. Getting Trump the fuck out of office and turning the Republican Party back to the sewers from whence they came is not enough. If you're a conservative watching Democrats talk themselves into supporting Graham Plattner, the main Democrat who until recently wore what sure looked like a Totenkopf tattoo, he covered it up after it became a political embarrassment, you're probably experiencing deja vu. To a lesser but still familiar degree, I'm seeing Democrats engage in the same process of absurd accommodation and justification the Republicans use to excuse their deep love for Donald Trump, unquote. Yep. There we go.
David French.
Yep.
You know, Democrats are just as bad.
They are. They're heading that way.
Another of the New York fucking Times worst hires ever, Brett Stevens, said this about Plattner less than a month ago. Quote, Democrats should not be in the business of creating monsters for the sake of slaying monsters. And Plattner, the Nazi-themed tattoo-sporting and Israel-despising presumptive Democratic nominee in the race for the main Senate seat held by the Republican incumbent Susan Collins, represents everything the Democrats should not be, unquote.
Mm-hmm. Which is nothing but National Review swill tarted up in New York Times respectability.
New York fucking Times.
Again, apologies for the mispronunciation. Which was the whole point in the fucking Times hiring a mope like Stevens in the first place.
Yep.
And to be clear, what Plattner has said publicly does mark him as a very sharp critic of the Israeli government, of U.S. military aid to Israel and to Israel's conduct in Gaza. But that doesn't mean he despises Israel. But for Stevens, anything short of unstinting support for anything Bibi Netanyahu gets up to is anti-Semitism. Which sounds real familiar, doesn't it? Almost like back in the days when anything short of unstinting support for George W. Bush's Iraqi debacle would have conservative assholes like Stevens screaming American-hating, terrorist-loving traitors from the fucking rooftops.
And then there's the Bulwark. You remember the Bulwark, right, Dirk Glass? Do you remember
them? I do. I've heard of them.
Forever exhorting Democrats to be heterodox. Welcome outsider candidates. Talk like normal people talk. Run against your own party because the people, whoever they are, want someone who will shake up the established order.
Uh-huh.
And from the Bulwark's morning shots yesterday, quote, the problem with Plattner. In fetishizing outsiders, I thought that's what they wanted us to do.
On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Yeah. Democrats are getting used to excusing bad behavior. We've seen this movie before. Unquote. For the record, also in the New York fucking Times, there is Michelle Goldberg's long and fairly well-balanced column, as she always does, about choices and consequences, entitled, quote, Graham Plattner is no Nazi, unquote.
And also for the record, a confession, I grew up knowing my share of problematic young men. In fact, hell, I was a reckless, problematic young man.
I've heard that.
Yeah, you would not recognize me if you talked to me in my 20s. Some of us turned out terribly. Some of us died. Some people I know went to prison. Some joined the army. And some of those meatheads are doing just fine. They've got four kids. They love Donald Trump. They have a speedboat or two or three, a vacation home, and they vacation in the Bahamas every year. They're doing great. And I also grew up with my share of reckless, problematic young men who turned out wonderfully, became great husbands and fathers. Some of them found God in all sincerity. Some of them were gangbangers who deeply regretted that life and went on to become gang intervention counselors, pillars of the community. And the thing is, I never could have picked which one was going to be which based on what I knew about them at the time.
And what you knew about yourself at the time was, you know, did you ever think you'd be a minivan driving stepfather of three kids?
And my brother, who's an amazing dad, an amazing granddad, amazing husband, there was no hint of that in him when he and I were just tussling teens in our early 20s, being very irresponsible, doing things that I look at our kids and I say, boy, are you doing better than I ever did.
Well, that's because you taught them to drive.
Yeah, well, that's true. but, you know,
you
this is...
You can't do what I did in my 20s.
No, you can't. You absolutely can't. And it amazes me that there is no reservoir of forgiveness or understanding for people who fuck up. And people I knew who went in the army came out really fucked up. And remember, a lot of these people, they might be a little older than Plattner, went into the army because we were in a war that Republicans lied us into. Mm-hmm. They were taking anybody. They were shoveling people out the door as fast as they could. They didn't make any distinction about it because that war was the great war. And maybe a bunch of those people came back feeling betrayed by their country, feeling really like their country had fucked them over. Yep. A friend of mine that I used to drink whiskey with in Chicago was a writer, a liberal writer, who had gone to Afghanistan because his country told him he needed to go. And he came back, and what he wanted to do when he got back was, the first thing he did was start driving people to the polls for John Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he liked to talk to me about liberal stuff. And he liked to talk to his veteran friends about veteran stuff. There wasn't a lot of overlap between the two. But there's a world of difference between people like Donald Trump and everybody associated with him who consciously have gone through life being the worst people they could possibly be, being terrible people, being terrorists. Stephen Miller was apparently a complete right-wing Nazi asshole the day he came out of the womb until the day he walked into the White House. And that is the standard against which I measure anyone running against them. And anyone who can stop them, who can bring them up short, who can start to undo this stuff, that person has my vote. Now, we're in the primary season, and this is just the primaries. But I can tell you from personal experience, there are people who redeem themselves and people who do not, and it's a coin toss. So there's no way to know,
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, this
really
is why I was so upset on Sunday when I saw the New York fucking Times doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary's emails, Biden's age, and now we've got Plattner's text. And mm-hmm. there is no way on earth to know in advance of his election to the Senate, if that happens, mm-hmm. what is in Graham Plattner's heart. You know, who he is. Will he be another John Fetterman? All of us are constantly looking for, we all have PTSD from Fetterman.
Yes, we do.
And we're behaving yep. like people with PTSD. That's, mm-hmm. that's, it is irrational the way we Democrats are behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to primary Fetterman and just get him out of there.
Yeah,
Make him run as a Republican and vote him out.
It's an understandable trauma reaction.
Yeah, it is. But Plattner could be another Paul Wellstone. I mean, that's a pretty high bar, but
yeah, it is.
No one knows. And it's not up to any one of us, and it's not up to the National Party, it's not up to Fox News, and it's certainly not to the New York fucking Times. This is up to Maine Democratic voters in the primary. And they know the guy. Maine politics is on the ground. They can go and talk to him and see him face to face and discuss things with him in a town hall.
Mm-hmm. He's been up and down the state.
Yep.
He's been in bookstores like Dick Durbin.
Yeah, right.
Answering, you know, picking out summer reads and answering questions. It's all very eye level, as I understand it. And mm-hmm. if this had been our choice in Illinois, we have a simple rule in our house when it comes to primaries. That's when you get to vote any way you please for whatever reason suits you. Go nuts. Vote whoever you like. The general election is when you put on your big boy pants or your big girl pants and vote for whoever the hell is running to stop the Republicans. In 2016, during the primaries, we were a house divided between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Oh, the battles that raged in the living room, Blue Gal. Oh, the scars.
The living envy the dead.
Yes, it was tragic. And here's the thing. Neither of them won.
Yeah.
So in the general election, we threw our full support behind Hillary Clinton because she was a competent public servant and the alternative was so catastrophically worse. So if I were a Mainer, if I lived in Maine and was facing these choices, I'd probably vote for David Costello. Based on his online bio, seems like a decent guy, a conscientious public servant, been in government for 20, 30 years, born and raised in the state, and has, as I said, a lot of government experience.
As a Democrat. Yeah.
So putting him in the Senate seems like a safe and reasonable choice.
Yeah.
Not crazy. Then if he loses to Plattner, I'd throw my full support behind Graham Plattner. Flaws and all, because the alternative, leaving the Senate in the hands of Donald Trump's minions, is so catastrophically worse.
Yep. And this is when I need to bring up something I mentioned to you in the car the other day, Driftglass.
Yes.
Which is, Republicans had a disappointment like this on the Supreme Court with
yes.
David Souter.
Yes, they did.
David Souter, famously spoken of by Eric Erickson as a goat fucker.
Yes. Yes.
And what they did was they got their billionaires together
mm-hmm.
and decided we're not going to allow Republican presidents to merely nominate a well-qualified judge
right.
off a random tree. We're
right.
going to grow the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And those trees are going to be populated with the fruit of severely conservative legal reckoning. We are
yep.
never going to allow a fake Republican who votes, then gets in a lifetime appointment and votes like a liberal,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote. We're never allowing that to happen again.
And play hardball.
And continue and work to elect Donald Trump, because Donald Trump will populate the Supreme Court with lifetime appointment three justices.
Well, and remember.
Yeah.
In the summer of 2016, when the primaries weren't quite wrapped up, but things were still cooking along, one of the loudest advocates for stealing a Supreme Court seat from Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And demanding that you have the power to do it, you should fucking well do it. Mitch McConnell, get off your ass and take that seat and don't let Obama put someone on the court, was Rick Wilson.
Yep.
You know, Lincoln Project, hero of the resistance, Rick Wilson.
That's why you want elections.
Yeah.
You want elections to steal that Supreme Court seat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah. and just fuck the rules. The rules don't mean anything. The rules are just shit you made up. Make up different rules. And so the idea that we're going to get anywhere with these people by playing fair and playing nice. No, no, that's not how they got Roe versus Wade overturned and started stripping away human rights. And they're going to come after gay rights and trans rights and are going to allow corporations to do whatever the fuck they want with anything and give Donald Trump immunity from anything he does. They did that. That did not happen suddenly. That was the process, a long project, which even in the summer of 2016, Rick Wilson could not imagine that someone like Trump would actually win his party's nomination and then win the White House because he never fucking well understood the base. They never understood, even though his whole career was prodding bigots out of their easy boy loungers to go vote against their best interests. That was all, you know, comparing decent Democratic candidates to Osama bin Laden. Talking about Barack Obama Mau-Mauing people. That was Rick Wilson's stock and trade. Being the worst person you could imagine because he would stoop. There's no depths to which he wouldn't stoop to get Republicans elected. And then his party that he helped create turned out to be the party we warned him about. And suddenly he gets all, oh my goodness, how did this happen about it? But this took them a long time and they invested billions of dollars into it. And now we're living with the results of that. So,
and I just want to say that regardless of anyone's past, regardless of how people vote in the future, and regardless of Fetterman, by the way, and I realize, again, we all have PTSD over Fetterman. We do. And we could spend, if we had the kind of willpower, if we had the will, I'm going to go ahead and quote Bloody Bill Kristol, if we had the will to do it, to find billionaires and make them spend money on growing loyal Democratic socialist senators on trees, right? The fact is that we need 50% plus one.
Yes.
And what happens when you get 50% plus one, my dear, sweet, professional left listeners, who I love so much, that's when you get Bernie Sanders on the chairmanship, the chair seat of the budget committee.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Where he can do things.
Where he can do things. I had a whole, we're going to get off on this tangent here, but I keep having these big arguments on Blue Sky, and I don't know why I do it, but people who want Jasmine Crockett to be Speaker of the House.
No.
And they said, Crockett for Speaker. And I went, I hope you mean Sonny Crockett.
Yeah.
From Miami Vice.
What?
Because
no.
if you're going to take the power and rock star power of Jasmine Crockett and put her in the responsibility of making 300 House Democrats, 220 House Democrats happy all day long with administrative bullshit.
Yeah.
There's so many people on Blue Sky who treat their heroes like Lego pieces, who have no desires of their own. So someone
sets.
That they love, a Democrat that they love, who might want to retire someday or have a baby or not have to think about administrative things and just go and do rallies and so forth and move toward, or might have a passion about universal health care and want to work toward that. But no, I love this person. So I want Bernie Sanders to be vice president.
Yeah, whatever.
Do you know what a step down that is for Bernie Sanders?
Yeah. Well,
and he doesn't want that job.
And Jasmine Crockett is a star wide receiver.
Yes.
She's got crazy moves. She's amazing. She's fast.
And you want her
to clever.
Mop. You want her to mop the locker room.
Yeah. I want her to be, you know, a line coach. I want her to be, you know, a kicking coach.
She's going to pick which locker people have.
You don't.
No.
No, 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 no. this is how you lose wars.
Yes, exactly.
By putting people that you imagine would be fun to have as, you know, wouldn't it be cool if? What are your fun games to play at home? The what if game is a fun game to play at home. But when you are literally trying to figure out where to position your strengths to overcome a rising fascist party in the United States, it's really important that you just kind of take the blinders off, get brutally practical about where to put people and what they can do.
And I've said that many times on this podcast. Hakeem Jeffries is good at placing former prosecutors and rock stars on committees where they can do the most damage to Republicans.
Yeah, keep him away from the microphone.
Right. And he needs to stop being on the Sunday shows, period. Yeah, no more Hakeem on TV.
No. I have a list of people you can put on the Sunday shows.
Besides Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah, they'll be great. And this is, you and I were talking the other day about Fiorella LaGuardia.
Yes.
And how Mamdani is just running
Mamdani
that playbook.
Mamdani is doing the LaGuardia thing. Yes, but he is.
As I understand it, someone from New York, one of our many, many thousands of New York listeners, by the way, Chicago is better in every way than New York. here you go. Come after me in the comments. Pizza's better. People are better. Lakefront's better. Anyway, Fiorella LaGuardia was not an inspiring public figure in person.
No, he wasn't sexy.
No. So he hired a guy to be the official city greeter, a gentleman with steely gray hair who'd be the guy who would meet officials at the airport and welcome them to the city or whatever. I'm not sure the details, but he understood what his strengths were. His strengths were reading the Sunday comics to kids. He
during
was
a
real
strike.
Good at that.
During a strike. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
During he was really good at doing those things. He knew what his strengths were. Every successful politician I know of, including like the Daley family in Chicago, understood what their weaknesses were and what their strengths were, and knew where to put people that would complement what they could do, which is what you have to do if you would like to win elections. Anyway, like I said, if it were me and I were in Maine, I'd probably vote for Costello. But if he loses, I go to Plattner, because these are the tools we need to use to get the Republican Party the fuck out of power.
Because I want liberals running the Senate Budget Committee.
Yes, absolutely.
And the Senate Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Agriculture Committee. I want Democrats in those roles.
And I want prosecutors with sharp teeth and sharp elbows running all the investigations.
And we want subpoenas. And you're not going to get that unless you get 50 plus one in the Senate.
That's the deal. That's the basic arithmetic of the race.
Yep.
If you will.
Yep. And you do not get to filibuster committee chairmanships. And the 60 vote, it takes 60 votes to get anything through the Senate, doesn't count in committees that are televised. That's where you win. Okay. But even though this is the basic arithmetic going on here, the legacy media in general and the New York fucking Times in particular clearly wants to stir the pot, because a stirred pot means content and eyeballs and clicks. And they just also like making life difficult for Democrats.
Yes, they do.
It's their stock in trade. Juicy bones to gnaw on. Democrats in disarray. So much more fun than one more tedious discussion about how the Trump regime and its enablers are looting this country while they wreck it almost beyond repair. Try to imagine that New York fucking Times story about Plattner sexting, beginning with these paragraphs. Quote, Plattner's wife, Mrs. Amy Gertner, said the couple who had married in November 2023, according to the town clerk of Sullivan, Maine, was working through his indiscretions in marriage counseling. Ms. Gertner told the campaign that the couple had dealt with the issue in counseling, according to the official. Our marriage today is stronger than ever before, she added. I know the man I married and the husband he has been to me on the best and the worst days of my life. That hasn't changed and it won't, unquote. Those paragraphs are in the New York fucking Times article, buried near the bottom.
Yeah, because that's not the story.
Nope.
That's not the story. Graham Plattner, just to be very clear about what went on here, this is private. It shouldn't be dragged in the public, but he didn't assault anyone. He didn't rape anyone, as Donald Trump has done, or pay off a porn star and then lie about it and then try to deduct the bribe from his taxes.
The bribe he paid the porn star.
Yeah.
Yes.
As Trump has also done. He didn't cheat on his second wife with his third mistress while trying to impeach a sitting president over an adulterous affair, as Newt Gingrich did. And Gingrich, you will recall, had his public persona completely whitewashed and rehabilitated by a guy named David Gregory. And Gregory was host of the most watched Sunday show in history, Meet the Press. And by the way, the man Gingrich tried and failed to impeach and remove was Bill Clinton, whose crime was cheating on his wife with a young intern.
Lucy Rutherford was FDR's longtime mistress.
Yes, she was. And how many mistresses did Jack Kennedy have on the side, Blue Gal?
A lot.
Yeah.
Plattner didn't dare reporters to follow him around and then get busted with his mistress on his lap on the deck of a boat called Monkey Business. For you kids out there, that was Democrat Gary Hart.
That was Democrat Gary Hart. He didn't father a child out of wedlock with his maid like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He didn't turn his back while children under his care were molested, as in the case of Congressman Jim Jordan.
And where should we even begin to talk about Ken Paxton, Blue Gal?
Oh, my God. By the way, it's not just Ken Paxton cheating on his wife. It's Ken Paxton's love nest paid for by a rich person who had business before the legislature of the state of Texas.
Yeah, he is just solid corruption.
Corrupt.
Through and through.
Yeah. And that's not the woman that he cheated on who is the subject of his divorce. That's another mistress.
But no, wait a minute. Is he working through this? Has he worked through this in counseling?
No.
Has his wife come out and said, you know, this is the man I married and I love him dearly? And
no.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, she's saying, I'm going to divorce you, you son of a bitch. Then I guess today they've canceled the divorce trial for now, which means somebody's paid both of them off.
Yeah.
They said, we can't lose this seat, so let's put the divorce away. There is no hint that Plattner's sexting early on in his marriage, which is apparently over with now and dealt with counseling, but that sexting was non-consensual, coercive, or criminal. Nor was any of this consummated in the flesh. At worst, what Plattner did was a little higher on the naughty bad scale than Jimmy Carter telling Playboy magazine in November 1975 that, quote, I've looked on a lot of women with lust. I've committed adultery in my heart many times, unquote.
And that was the end of his presidency, candidacy. This is from the EBSCO Information Service. This was the context of Carter's remarks, which almost no one ever talks about. Quote, as veteran journalist Robert Scheer was preparing to leave at the end of the final interview session, he casually asked Carter if he thought the interview would successfully reassure people who worried that his self-righteousness would make him a stubborn, inflexible president. Carter responded with a deeply personal monologue about his upbringing and his beliefs on religion and sin, fully aware that Scheer was still taping their conversation. Carter claimed that humility was central to Christ's teachings. Salvation by grace entailed the recognition that no one was entitled to claim moral superiority over anyone else. Carter did not consider himself an exception. He, too, had looked upon women with lust, committed adultery in his heart, and had done so many times. He could not condemn other people for having sex out of marriage, even if God had forgiven him for his own sexual sins. The dramatic intensity of this speech was heightened by his blunt sexual slang, intermingled with references to the Bible and the writings of theologian Paul Tillich, unquote.
Tillich.
I'm sorry, Tillich.
Yeah.
You would know that, wouldn't you?
I would. We had to read him in a certain school I went to.
Yeah.
This was the aftermath, quote, his candid confession became a focal point of media attention and public discourse, overshadowing other aspects of his campaign and leading to a significant backlash just the weeks before the election. Despite initially having a strong lead over his opponent, Gerald Ford, Carter's comments contributed to a shift in public perception, leading to a tightening of the race. Ford surpassed Carter for the first time after the first presidential debate, a development that some attributed in part to the Playboy interview. It took a more serious political gaffe by Ford, which you and I discussed before the show, was pretending or stating that Poland was not under the domination of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
During the second presidential debate, for the Republican candidate to lose his momentum, unquote.
Yeah. So, how did sexting become a story in the first place? Well, Plattner's wife confided in the campaign's political director, Genevieve McDonald, during the campaign's internal vetting process, saying that it had stopped before the campaign began, and they had addressed it in therapy. And just like magic, a few days later, the story appeared in the Wall Street Journal and in the New York fucking Times. So if you're starting to get strong Hillary's emails from vibes from the story, or Biden's age vibes, especially from the untoward attention the New York Times has given to it. You are not alone.
Nope. Bluegill's right there with you.
And we can tell you who to listen to. I'm sorry, we can't tell you who to listen to, except to say there is no larger lesson here from which to wring a torrent of platitudes about these modern times.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we can tell you that unless you're a registered Maine voter, a registered Maine Democratic primary voter, This is entirely out of your hands.
That's right. We can also tell you who not to listen to. Don't listen to Brett Stevens, whose previous record for being smugly and indignantly wrong about everything includes this op-ed from March 24th, 2026. That's this year, Driftglass.
It is.
Quote, "The war is going better than you think," unquote.
And this also from Brett Stevens from April, just a month later, also in this year, quote, "The Iranian advantage is an illusion," unquote.
Don't listen to recently former Republican pundits who from week to week can't decide whether Democrats need to shit, get off the pot, fly to the moon, or become werewolves.
It depends on the day of the week.
It does.
Seriously. Do not listen to Fox News or pay any heed to white supremacist slop shops like the National Review.
The National Review is a white supremacist slop shop.
And has been for decades.
A long time.
Yep.
And never, ever listen to a New York fucking Times, unreconstructed conservative evangelical charity hire trying to launder every Democratic Party flaw or shortcoming through the both sides machine and turn it into a slippery slope to Stalinism that would be just as bad as Trumpism or worse.
Yeah. Why don't you go back and tell it to the Marines? Why don't you go back and rehab your own party? We already got one. And just this afternoon, this is also from the Bulwark, comes the obligatory promise that this really, really isn't a both sides thing. We swear. Quote, Maine Democratic Senate primary candidate Graham Plattner and Texas Republican Senate candidate Ken Paxton are different candidates dealing with different scandals. Paxton's infidelity is not the same as Plattner's, nor is Paxton's pattern of corruption and other moral shortcomings the same as Plattner's Nazi tattoo and history of racist comments online. I am not equating their wrongdoings, nor do I propose doing so, unquote.
Uh-huh.
Which is then predictably followed by what very big important three-letter word? You guessed it, but.
Oh, quote, God.
But the scandal-infused coverage about each candidate has given rise to a similar debate in their respective parties, unquote.
I would like to see the scandal-infused coverage about each candidate giving rise to some soul-searching in the media about what the fuck their job is.
Good luck with that, Blue Gal.
And you know what's not being discussed because a private matter between a married couple is sucking all the oxygen out of the air? Yep. We're not talking about Susan Collins and her cowardice, her capitulations, her betrayal of her constituents, and her gender, by the way, in favor of the lobbyists and billionaires she serves, and her absolutely appalling voting record.
Yep.
Also, the fact that she should have stepped aside for a younger candidate. I'll just come out and say it. She's too old to run for another term.
And she's useless. She's useless.
Yeah.
She's a rag doll that Trump can shake and make do whatever he wants.
And she'll give a big, long speech in the Senate about why she's doing it, because she's independent.
And speaking of both sides, if you've made it this far, well, then, damn it, you've earned either an extra helping of both sides do it, bottom of the barrel scrapings, or a double extra helping of both sides do it, bottom of the barrel scrapings. However, be warned, we are about to enter a place so strange, so unnatural, that it is indistinguishable from the top-notch blue sky post from the inimitable New York Times PitchBot.
We love New York Times PitchBot.
We do. And because his writings are magic.
Yes, they are.
They're perfect. They're little diamonds. They're little perfect diamonds. This is from the New York fucking Times, May 28th, quote, "Both parties kind of get it wrong." Yeah, here we go. Here we go. There's only one story, Blue Gal. The young men who may swing the midterms, many Gen Z men who voted for Donald Trump and are dismayed by his time in office, but they say they're not hearing an appealing pitch from Democrats either, unquote. You see, already the blue sky virus, I'm sorry, the both sides virus, has successfully laid its eggs in these youngsters' brains. What rich harvest can we expect from them in the decades to come? Well, let's get back to the article and find out.
Oh, I can't wait.
Quote, frustrated with the cost of everyday necessities, Carl Tice, a 20-year-old tree landscaper in Milwaukee, voted for Donald Trump in 2024 because he promised economic relief, but Mr. Tice has not yet seen any improvement. In Phoenix, Jared Castle, a 25-year-old server and restaurant manager, voted for Mr. Trump because his opposition to abortion, but has been horrified by immigration raids and regrets his decision. And Owen Chain, 21, from rural Klamath Falls, Oregon, Klamath Falls, Oregon. Calamity Jane, Oregon.
Sorry, folks.
I'm a little tired. It's been a long day. Yeah. Who listens to podcasts from influencers who supported Mr. Trump in 2024, like Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn, has been disappointed by the president's much-heralded tariff policy. He said he would get bad tariffs. He said it would get bad because of tariffs, and he said it would get better, Mr. Chain said. We're still waiting, unquote.
This is important to point out because guess what, guys? These are not low information voters.
No.
These are garbage information voters. Through some long and winding path, word reached the 20-year-old tree landscaper that Trump was going to improve his economic situation.
Mm-hmm.
However, we know exactly where Owen Chain, 21, from rural Klamath Falls, Oregon, gets his data. He listens to Joe Rogan and Theo Von Driftglass. So when you hear the New York fucking Times report that, quote, neither party they said was speaking to their concerns, unquote, the next logical question to ask, the question we have asked many, many, many times on this podcast, is how the hell do they know? And I'm willing to bet a whole sack of russet potatoes that these children got their free both sides do it decoder ring from exactly the same polluted sources that fed them all those promises and lies about Donald Trump.
Yeah, apparently they can't hear black or female. They're just deaf to it. They
can't. No, la, la, la. I can't.
Just sounds like Charlie Brown's mom. That's all they hear.
I will never forget, however, the woman who thought Donald Trump was going to pay for her IVF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Now, I'm going to do a quick pivot into woodworking, so bear with me, Blue Gown. Because that's...
Are you ready, everybody? He's going to do a quick pivot into woodworking.
So hang on tight, people. Nobody else, no other podcast dares to do shit like this, but we do. When doing fast glue-ups of quick assemblies or inlays, there's a thing most woodworkers use called CA glue, which, if you really need to know, stands for cyanoacrylate adhesives, but nobody calls it that. It's CA glue or instant bond super glue. Model makers use it. People use it when aquascaping their aquariums, which is an actual thing apparently, and so on. In woodworking, you apply the glue to one piece of wood and then spray the activator on the other. And when pressed together, they form a permanent, unbreakable bond in about 5 to 15 seconds. And that is how conservative propaganda works hand in glove with legacy media both sides do it lies. Once those two are bonded together, they become almost impossible to break apart. And now you know all there is to know about woodworking, so you're welcome. Links to my
product. Get the good glue.
Links to my tool reviews in the comments.
So as the New York fucking Times article continues, we know exactly what we're looking for, that glue. Let's see if we can find it. Quote, Vincent McKibben, 25, a computer hardware engineer in Austin, Texas, grew up in a liberal family, but enjoys the irreverent banter offered by right-leaning voices like Mr. Rogan. It's so crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just so crazy. Recently, however, he has started to worry that the heterodox manosphere preys on buzzy culture war issues to attract attention rather than offering substantive solutions.
You think?
That's a guy 25 going on 35. Because there's that's the difference. Between 25 and 35. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that has not left him entirely enthusiastic about Democrats. He said that the clinical, policy-driven voices on the left felt very academic and lacked a masculine charisma that people could latch on to.
Ah, okay.
Both parties kind of get it wrong, Mr. McKibben said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interviews, I can't.
Pray continue,
Prudell. In interviews, young men indicated just how tricky appealing to young men might prove to be. Many were deeply skeptical of the Democratic brand and viewed the left as unwelcoming. Some, for instance, said a traditional family dynamic with a man as the breadwinner for his wife and children would give them purpose, an aspiration of masculinity they said they believed the left discourages.
Yeah, we hate marriage and children, don't we, Blue?
And family.
Yeah, hate
them. And affordable housing and child tax credits and universal health care.
And being
and all of the things that might make keeping a family together.
Yeah. Possible.
Body and soul possible, given that the basics are now unaffordable to what, 45% of the public?
Yeah. You know, and hey, what about paying for college for the kids in a way that's affordable? Yeah. You know, all the things that look at our policy prescriptions.
Yeah.
And I guess we don't say them with enough testosterone because that's what the problem is. But
we don't say it with enough misogyny is
right.
The problem.
And I think it's pretty clear that these people are getting their what Democrats are like filtered through Joe Rogan, Theo Von, and other garbage people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And feeling like what they want is a fembot who will have their babies and wash their dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't exist.
But
women want equality in the home and in the office.
But not on Pornhub.
Not on the OnlyFans. My OnlyFans girlfriend is perfect.
She's perfect. I'd marry her if I could afford it. Damn you, Joe Biden. All right. I suggest we
read the last sentence of this New York fucking Times article.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the left discourages an aspiration of masculinity. Okay. Which is, you know, gender equality. That's what that is. Okay. Mr. Cassell in Phoenix, a one-time Republican who is now nonpartisan. Does he mean independent? I think he does.
That's exactly what he means.
Said he felt, quote, completely lost politically.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yes, we have now truly entered the zone of New York Times PitchBot, who wrote this, quote, this is New York Times PitchBot. Trump has turned the United States into a lawless autocracy with a terrible economy. But one of my daughter's friends wore a keffiyeh to graduation. I have never felt more politically homeless, unquote.
And this, quote, Trump just stole $2 billion from the Treasury and gave it to a bunch of criminals and traitors. But my local public radio host won't stop talking about third spaces. I've never felt more politically homeless, unquote.
And another one from your New York Times PitchBot, quote, the former head of Trump's Border Patrol recently attended a convention of fascists that explicitly called for Weimar solutions. But my neighbor has a bumper sticker that says a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle on her Subaru. I have never felt more politically homeless, unquote.
And quote, Donald Trump has set the United States back 50 years with his corruption, his pointless wars, and his attacks on American institutions. But online liberals won't stop talking about the global north. I have never felt more politically homeless. Oh, and finally, there really is one more news item that we should mention, Blue Gal.
What, Driftglass?
It's from Politico Playbook.
Politico?
Politico, yes. Politico's on this. They confirm Matthew Dowd is joining the Lincoln Project as a senior advisor.
He finally landed, and it's with the Lincoln Project, Driftglass. We really ought to run Project 2029 past Matthew Dowd and the Lincoln Project before we go another step further.
Genius idea, Blue Gal. Genius idea. Continuing, the news was confirmed on June 2nd, 2026, when it was announced as a major personnel update. He brings a deep background of political strategy to the group. Having previously worked as a political analyst for ABC and MSNBC, where he was the king of both sides do it bullshit and lies, as well as serving as a top strategist for former President George W. Bush, where he engineered the explicitly gay-bashing campaign that helped put Bush back into office in 2004. So congratulations, Lincoln Project, living up to everything I always thought you were.
We love you guys. Feel free to write to both of us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. And thank you for supporting our show at patreon.com/proleftpod, by the way.
Yes, /proleftpod. We don't want to leave that part out. And you can also find us on Venmo if that's more to your liking. It's more to your tastes. Please, if you can, also share our show on social media. Let people know we exist and we're out here in the cornfield. And if you love this podcast, get someone else to listen to it too. And we very much appreciate you doing that.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties were going to vote for this Jesus fella until they heard that he said some nice things about the Samaritans, and he started a riot at a currency exchange.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is produced and recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright DGBG Productions. ProLeftPod.com.